The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Keep on, keep on.
Oh, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR Lee. And welcome. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here this morning. Thanks for joining us for an hour of conversation we do every morning here on the show. We're live and local this morning in our WTBR studio, as we are on Thursday and Friday mornings. And I have a great show coming up for you. A very interesting show today. I'm going to be talking to Tyler Shedd. He is the city engineer here in the city of Pittsfield. And filling in admirably for Ricardo Morales, who feeling a bit under the weather, and we'll talk to him again at a future date. But Tyler is going to be telling us a lot about some of the city projects that are going on, the road projects, bridge projects, streets, safe streets, speed humps. We might even get into that. All kinds of good stuff here this morning. So stick around. You're definitely going to want to hear this conversation. All right. First, let's go to our weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Winter weather advisory in effect from 4 a.m. to 1 p.m. EST Friday. Today, sunny, colder with highs in the lower 20s. West wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 4 below. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Cold with lows around 16. Temperature rising into the upper 20s after midnight. Southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
And I'm glad everybody made it through the winds last night. That was probably the biggest feature of our weather. A little bit of nuisance snow, I guess, when you woke up this morning, a little bit of snow on your car. Not much. We haven't had too much this year in the way of big, big snowstorms. I think the best we've gotten so far is about 8 inches about a week ago, which wasn't, again, not terrible. We've seen a lot worse than that. But the winds really kind of get you when you get out there. Otherwise, it would be, you know, halfway decent walking around. But, you got 50-mile-an-hour winds hitting you. You're not going to want that. All right. Welcome to the show. Tyler Shedd is my guest here this morning, the city engineer in the city of Pittsfield. Welcome, Tyler, and thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to fill in for Ricardo.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad you could at the last minute. That was definitely a pinch-hitter situation, and we wish Ricardo well. So tell us about yourself. I know you've been on the show before, so people might not be too familiar with you, but let us know a little bit about your background and how you get to where you are now, and then we'll talk about the duties of the city engineer.
Yeah, so I started with the city in October of 2022. Been on the show once before, right, next to Ricardo. And my background is in civil engineering. I went to school at University of New Hampshire. It's where I grew up in southern New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Had a few stops along the way before getting here in Burlington and in Buffalo, New York.
Hmm. So you're pretty familiar with cold weather. The three places you just mentioned there, Buffalo, Burlington, Vermont, and New Hampshire. My goodness.
Burlington, yeah, the winds. More so the, like, I feel like underrated aspect of the weather out there in terms of unpleasantness is how windy it is along the lake and everything, especially.
No joke in Buffalo either, right?
The snow.
Lake effect snow.
Yeah, the snow. We lived in a spot in the city that didn't get the snow quite as bad, closer to the water and a little bit further north. You know, the geography protects you a little bit, but that just means you're getting a foot and a half instead of three.
listeners might know that I have some Syracuse background as well, so I am definitely in sympathy with you there. And the lake effect just comes up, and you don't know exactly when or how much you're going to get. It just happens, right?
Yeah,
a lot of times.
And the other part of it too is like you get the lake effect rain, where it felt like it'd rain for like a week straight, and a couple of times there too. But yeah.
So you made your way to Pittsfield, Massachusetts, to be the city engineer. And how long have you been doing that?
So 2022, October, so a little over 2 years now. This is going to be like sort of the third cycle through everything. Things sort of go sort of on a fiscal year cycle where it's like, all right, we're planning, we're executing, you know, we're wrapping up, planning, executing, wrapping up, you know, you kind of keep cycling through things.
Yeah, has a regular rhythm to it, right?
Yeah, yeah, especially for the annual stuff, the annual roadwork stuff, and then you sort of sprinkle in the larger multi-year projects.
Yeah. Yep, and you know, certainly we're going to be talking about all the projects that are going on right now, and the multi-year ones, as I know I've talked to Commissioner Morales about here on this show, it's really a marathon, not a sprint, right? There are things that start out and you know, maybe planning today that won't actually see the completion for 5, 10 years, sometimes longer.
Yeah, yeah, and I think probably residents know that as well as anybody, where, you know, they might have been asking and complaining about problem spots mm-hmm. in the city for, you know, decades and decades, in some cases, and now it's maybe coming to fruition, or there's, mm-hmm. you know, momentum behind it and building. And
yep. And some of those projects obviously are tied in with the state as well, that they're just beyond the reach of what a local municipality can handle or do, or, you know, it's beyond our budget, for example. And we're going to be talking about the Bel Air Dam. But tell us, you know, before we get on to that, what the duties and responsibilities of the city engineer are specifically, because a lot of people listening might not be familiar with what that position does.
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing in terms of, like, residents' day-to-day life and enjoyment in the city is going to be the annual road work. So, like, that's mm-hmm. Really, the position is the capital improvements and managing the capital improvements. So that comes down to, like, the BMC Project Circle, working with the state mm-hmm. when it's sort of state-driven. And then also, you know, sort of recently kind of taking on applying and searching out for grants. So a lot of grants are money match, and that just means that it's, you know, the local dollar goes a little bit further because mm-hmm. we're, you know, getting money from someone else.
Yeah.
But it's planning and managing the capital improvement projects. It's sort of the biggest piece of it.
Hmm.
And so it's roadwork, speaking of planning, it's roadwork planning time. So, I mean, if you have a street that's in really bad condition, reach out to, you know, you can send me an email. It's on the city website, or you can reach out to your city councilor. I'm going to solicit their, you know, thoughts on road work coming up here yeah. this week. So
how do some of those projects get in the hopper, if you will? And there's probably two sides of it, right? The things that you mentioned with the larger projects where it's state coordination. I know there's something called a tip sheet, which is what the state looks for projects that are going to get designed or built, right? That's one of the ways that happens. And there, I'm sure there's some bigger ones that take much longer. And then there's the sort of the more ordinary city projects, like this road is in very poor condition and it has to get looked at. And, you know, the condition of all the roads has to be examined before you can say this year's priorities are X, Y, and Z, right? So yeah. give us an idea of how both of those things work.
Yeah, so starting small, the smaller projects, maybe that the highway department is able to manage in-house, those really start with, you know, getting something from a resident, right? Mm-hmm. Where they say, hey, there's a manhole that's failing and sinking down. Go out, look at it with the highway super. And it's like, you know, we pop open lids. Like, is this something you guys can repair? Do we got to get a contractor in with bigger equipment? Because if it's a deep manhole.
So the manholes basically have concrete around them, right? And they can sink at a different rate than than the road itself. Is that why we see a lot of the sort of the holes and stuff around those?
Yeah, and sometimes they're deeper too. So they're especially, you know, the sewer manholes because they all have, like, it's all got to get down to Holmes Road. So if there's a hill or something in the middle and you got to dig through it, then the manhole might be deeper, and then it's sitting on, you know, it's sitting on ground that's not freezing.
Mm-hmm.
It's below the frost depth, but the road and everything's shifting around it a little bit. And that kind of causes it. But then up by the surface, the steel frame and everything is sitting on, you know, brick and mortar.
Mm-hmm.
And that can sort of fail a little bit faster. And it's partly because you don't want the concrete all the way up at the surface around the asphalt. Sometimes they do rings around them with, like, concrete, but yeah.
Two thoughts I had as I was listening to that. One was, if you're a fan of the Blue Man Group at all, there's a part of the Blue Man Group's act where they say, and everything in the system has to flow in one direction, away.
Yeah.
Right. So with Holmes Road, that's where everything's headed. So
exactly. Yeah. Everything, especially in the sewer lines, you want it flowing away from you, your house, down to the wastewater plant.
Yeah.
And then sort of like, I think medium sized projects, thinking kind of, you know, like Holmes Road, like something that needs to go out to bid, that raised crosswalk, for example, that kind of, you know, that one specifically arised from an incident where a school kid was hit. But then it's, you know, people are like, this has been a problem. There's a city councilor, gets behind it, come up with a plan, find the money in either in the roadwork Chapter 90 budget and go and, you know, do it that way. And then sort of the big ones, you know, the BMC Circle, West Street and stuff like that, those, you know, can either go on the tip sheet where, you know, Ricardo sits on that and handles that. And those are sort of, you know, addressing problems that are long standing issues.
Yeah.
And, or it's, you know, from sort of the mayor level and city council putting capital funds into it and saying, this is something that needs to get done. And that's, there's a line there, of course, you know, like, I don't think, you know, when you start saying millions of dollars, that's when it's a really big decision for the city.
But that's how the priorities arise, right?
Yeah.
And it does start a lot of times from residents, from constituents who have an issue and complaining about it on Facebook, not always a great and direct way of getting your attention, I suppose. But there are other pathways, as you mentioned, talking to your city councilor, you know, making that known. I'm sure that there are some that are just obvious. You know, if you're driving around, even folks that work for the city can drive on some of the roads and say, okay, we know this one's got to get done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess like things that citizens, residents, even, you don't even have to be a resident. So that's kind of why I lean.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, citizen, person who lives in Berkshire County, visitor, there's the PittSmart app, and those are for the smallest of small things, potholes, and the like for speaking road work. But yeah, it's a lot of, I think a lot of it comes down to being, a thorn in the side of, in a lot of ways, because you can kind of quickly change focus where it's like, all right, this is a problem today and we're working towards it. And then you push and work on it and then something else comes up and you're in a different direction entirely. And, it's unfortunate. I wish, but I think that's just kind of human nature in some ways.
Well, and things do happen, and you can set priorities and all you want, and the goals that you have, and then you know, life happens, as they say. And you know, one of the issues that residents have been facing in the northern part of the city was the Pex Road Bridge, and that was one that was certainly known as a problem for a long time. It was closed down; half of it was closed down, but you could still traverse the bridge. And then suddenly the state comes in, does an inspection one day in July and says, oh, guess what? We're going to close the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right. And that changes everything because you had plans to do the bridge over in a certain way, leaving one lane open for the whole time. And then that just upset the apple cart completely. All right, so take us through that a little bit.
Yeah. So the one in some ways there, it was okay, it wasn't the worst timing that could have happened, right? Like, the worst timing would have been, you know, 2 years ago when there's no money to a design and all this. But we had already advertised for bid, and I think we're on the verge of awarding it to the winning bidder when we got that call. It might have even been a couple days before. And part of the reason the state, you know, had to recommend closing the bridge and recommend is softer language than they use, is that the federal guidelines and standards for the safety of bridges had changed, and a lot of those sort of borderline bridges ended up getting closed or having lane reductions and things. But yeah,
but that's so completely out of the control of the city, right?
You know,
the state comes in and makes that decision. You basically have to change your strategy.
Yeah, and so they, you know, when that happens, suddenly the bridge is closed, so now why take longer to construct it? That's going to cost a bit more. Let's change it to one single piece of precast concrete bridge.
And so it's taken a long time, even with that case, right? I mean, and the precast, it all has to be ordered and then constructed and then shipped and delivered. There's all kinds of other complications, right? Because it's a bridge over a part of the Housatonic River, essentially, right? A feeder to that. So there's water issues, conservation issues, I would think. There's also utilities going through there, and you have to wait for all those utility companies to do their job, right? And there's, can that delay a project as well?
Yeah, so they were always going to have to move the utilities so that the crane could lift in the new structure. And basically that's been the delay they've faced so far is that, you know, the bridge is suddenly closed. Verizon and Eversource and the various other, I think Berkshire Health Systems had fiber on the poles there too. We had fiber, I think, on the poles as the city. But it's one of those things where they're not going to drop everything they're doing just because you need to, even just because you need to replace a bridge.
Yeah,
right?
They've got their schedule. They got their projects they're doing too.
They're planned out, and I think it's frustrating from the city's standpoint. I've been frustrated with them, but I think from, you know, like stepping away from it, like they were quite accommodating to get it done even within 6 months. It doesn't feel that way, I'm sure, for residents, but the utilities are all now relocated, and I think next week they're going to be mobilizing and, you know, doing the final replacement of the structure there. I was out there yesterday with Rob. You mentioned conservation.
Yeah.
He's the conservation agent for the city, and went out and looked and talked to one of the, I think he's the foreman who's going to be out there, and was just, you know, made sure that they're going to have the things that conservation needs to see in place before they start really getting into it.
Yeah, if anyone's ever watched a conservation commission meeting, you know that they're very particular about anything within, I think, 300 feet of water, whether it's a river, a estuary, you know, a lake, anything like that. It's all got to be done very, very carefully.
Yeah, they're looking out for the natural resources in the county and making sure that they stay as pristine as possible.
It's a big project. And when can residents expect, do you think, at this point, where they might be able to drive over the PEX Road Bridge again?
So at this point, the next hurdle will be figuring out what sort of that road surface looks like. I think there's the distinct possibility that it's a section of it ends up being a packed gravel road. But I think their install time for the bridge is less than 4 weeks. So by the end of February, I'm baking in an extra week or two than what they've told me. But
assuming the weather cooperates and everything else goes smoothly.
No snow, no 50 mile an hour winds. Just they're able to pick up that bridge. The bridge is built and sitting in a precast yard. So they just got to go pick it up and drop it in place.
And what's the lifespan now of that bridge that's going in? Because the old one, I remember talking with Commissioner Morales about this, and there were design problems on sort of that whole generation of bridges where multiple ones like that all failed earlier, he said, than they might have expected them to last. How long is a bridge like this supposed to last?
Yeah, I think this bridge was existing bridge and sort of built in a couple different ways, but I think it lasted a little over 100 years. I think that's kind of a going benchmark for and this is like sort of a peek back behind the curtain. It's not even like sort of the designer isn't saying I want this to last 100 years. They're designing to a code that's developed by, you know, PhD civil engineers and structural specialty focused engineers who say, like, we gotta do these things to make it last, you know, this long. I think 100 years is really the design life for most structures. I mean, if you've got a huge federal highway structure, maybe they try and say it's a 200-year bridge or something. But
even some of the ones they constructed in the 50s and 60s now have reached the end of their life, and that isn't even 100 years. So it does. And I would think in the Northeast, where we've got all the salt on the roads and, you know, all the rust belt kind of issues, that they're just not going to last as long up here.
Yeah, I think some of the bridges built in the 50s and 60s, it was sort of, you know, they were changing how they were building bridges sort of during, and this is one of the weird things of civil engineering history, is that you can kind of guess how old, like, the age of bridges built by the style of construction. And in, obviously, in World War II time, steel is extraordinarily valuable. It's being used in warships and and all that, and tanks and etc. And so you got to design the bridge with as little steel as possible. Hmm. All of a sudden, the war ends and the steel is much, much cheaper. And it's the labor that's more expensive because you've just sent, at that time, effectively two generations of men who were doing the labor to war and they die.
Yeah.
And so now there's bigger pieces of steel with simpler construction. Hmm. And I think in the 60s, you know, concrete starts coming into play more heavily. And there were some things that were unknown there. And that's kind of why they last 50 years and fail.
Yeah.
And those bridges that you'd kind of mentioned, that style of construction, it was part of it was the reason they fail is water gets trapped in a void that's there by design for weight issue, for weight considerations, mm-hmm. and it degrades the concrete, but you can't see it until it's a huge major issue.
That's pretty interesting. And, you know, again, that's why history plays into what we do every day.
Yeah.
In our daily lives, you know, and here we are talking about a bridge, you know, with all this stuff. So Tyler Shedd is our guest here this morning on Morning Drive, if you're just tuning in. And he's a city engineer here in the city of Pittsfield talking about road and bridge projects. And right down the street from the PEX Road Bridge is the Pontusic Avenue Bridge. And it's actually, you know, basically right across the intersection of Wakona Street. And there it is. It's right between the old Nichols Pharmacy and Nichols Supermarket.
Yep.
So and if people aren't aware of where that is, and suddenly the state has said, well, you know, that is a deficient bridge as well, and that's got to get replaced. And guess what? We're in the process of doing that. So was that something that was on your radar a year ago? Were you thinking about that bridge?
No. Kind of when they first made contact with us, they told us that it's a style of construction bridge where they've seen rapid degradation and they go from being fair to moderate condition. And then, you know, 5 years later or, you know, they're saying this is structurally deficient considering lane closures and the like. So the state is kind of prioritizing very highly that style of construction so that they don't have to close them.
Okay. And obviously it's not, Pontusic Avenue is not exactly a major thoroughfare. It's kind of an offshoot of Wakona Street and Route 7 Upper North Street, but it still plays a very valuable role in that neighborhood. And if people are used to using it to get from one place to another, walking across it, for example, to go to school or church or any of those things, it becomes a major problem if that's going to be out of service for a while. And I think the state had said that that's another one, right? That are they going to close that one down completely and replace it?
I forget. I wasn't on the public meeting where they mentioned that, but I think they're going to, you know, just I think they have to the way it's sort of situated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like you mentioned, it's going to be unfortunate because it's also, you know, PEX Road will be done by the time they start.
That'll be good, right?
I feel confident in saying that because I think they're probably, you know, a year or more away from actually starting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as we're talking about other projects, there's Bel Air Dam, which will, as residents may or may not know, it's going to make Wakona Street a one-way going north once you get past PEX and Pontusic. So those are definitely going to overlap probably for a year, you know, one sort of summer season.
And so they're using Pontusic Ave as a bypass essentially for Wakona Street South.
Yep.
Right, in that respect. So they'll have to, I assume the state's going to be coordinating that so that there won't be the overlap where you won't have both of those in service at the same time.
Yeah, and I think the big consideration for them becomes like the emergency response because Wakona Street goes right to the hospital.
Yep.
There's Firehouse on PEX Road, which is the reason behind keeping Wakona Street North open. Is that just the detour for them to go up Pontusic? It's a big hill, and then down again on North Street is, you know, wasn't agreeable with the fire chief or their captains and.
All these things come into play. You know, it's not just, hey, we need a new bridge. Let's put the bridge in. It's like, no, when you do that, it affects emergency management. It affects, you know, education, schools, regular travel, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and when they replaced the Holmes Road Bridge, they shifted around fire personnel during that closure for construction because I think it was Lenox ended up covering parts of Pittsfield and Pittsfield ended up covering some of the parts of Lenox. And so It's just one of the things behind the scenes that when everything goes well, you don't notice. And, you know, hopefully people don't notice.
Right. Well, you don't realize, you know, the easy access that you have to things until you have to shut one off. Yeah. And then suddenly like, how am I going to do that now? So we're talking about the Pontusic Ave Bridge that, and that, that might be a, what, 2 to 3 year project potentially?
Yeah, I think that their plan is to advertise it 2027, or either advertise or start in 2027. Mm-hmm. So we're about 2 years away from seeing, you know, that disruption.
Yeah. And in that time, that's all the design work that they've got to do, right?
Yep. Yeah, they cleared the, I think the benchmark where they go to public meetings is usually 25% design is complete.
Okay.
And there's another, you know, there's other projects that will probably be coming forward with that as well. We had a 25% coordination meeting for some work here a week or two ago. Hmm. For utility coordination.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Again, complicated because lots of stuff comes and goes through there. And if you're going to disrupt it, you know, all those companies have to figure out how to reroute things to make sure that, you know, if you continue to get power and phone, and, internet, cable, whatever.
Yeah. And gas, Berkshire gas.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Right. Wastewater, I would think, right?
Thankfully, a lot of our wastewater stuff's already built. So people got to build around us. But if you know, they have to move something, there's got to be a plan in place. So with a bridge, a lot of the times you have utilities hanging on the bridge. Sometimes they go deep underneath the bridge and, you know, each has its own challenges. When it's hanging on the bridge, the obvious one is what do you do when the bridge is gone?
And then here's something too. If you've got really old infrastructure, if you've got a 100-year-old bridge plus, how are you finding out what all is underneath that bridge? Like, where do the utilities go? How true, let's say, are the plans and the documents that you have that you got to go back 100 years and find out what's actually there before you start pulling it all out?
Yeah, I think Pittsfield, like as far as the municipality, is pretty fortunate in it, especially with our sewer lines. Mm-hmm. There's been really good, as-built surveys done of them. And a lot of the times, it's like you say, like 100 years ago, I mean, 50 years ago, it's like there's probably not, you know, some of the benchmarks they were using probably don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like pulling from trees is a common one.
Really?
But trees die.
Yeah. Not exactly a permanent marker.
Yeah. So they're not fully permanent. But a lot of the technology for locating underground utilities has gotten really quite sophisticated. Mm. I don't understand, you know, exactly how they work, but they use sort of electric signals to detect, especially, you know, ferrous metal, like iron pipes that are pretty deep, you know, 10 feet and around there might be the limit. But yeah, they've gotten really quite good. And now, you know, when we replace them or work on them, generally they lay over warning tape, and that warning tape has a wire in it so that it can be detected later.
Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing now.
Yeah,
to make that easier.
That's now.
So 100 years from now, someone will have a much easier time of figuring this stuff out.
Exactly, especially when, you know, sewer pipes have been clay, they've been concrete, other like cast iron for water.
Or what a lot of homeowners have that, what do they call it, Orangeburg or whatever?
Yeah, oh, Orangeburg.
That is nasty.
Yeah, some of that's just practically paper.
Pressed paper.
Yeah, none of those things conduct metal, but we replace them with plastic, which isn't, you know, going to work with electric. So put the wire over top and away you go.
Interesting stuff. Tyler Shedd's my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, talking about city projects, utility projects, bridge projects, roads and stuff. Tyler, in a couple minutes, we're going to be going to that top of the hour break, but let's just toss out there the Bel Air Dam, which again, a big state project, pretty much all state money going into it. They're handling it. It's something that the city probably could not have done on its own.
Yeah.
Let's say that that's a huge multi-million dollar project, taking out a 150-year-old dam that's, you know, almost completely contaminated, but if it's if it goes down on its own, it's going to be a disaster, right? I mean, that's the point of taking this dam out.
Yeah, it'd be an environmental disaster. Not, I don't think it's a disaster so much because of the deluge of water behind it. There's not a huge volume of water impounded, but it's all what's replaced that water is sediment and soil that holds on to the pollution that's been deposited there for, you know, years.
Yeah. Way back in the 1800s, really, right? With the with the mills and the reason why that dam was there in the first place.
Yeah, there was even upstream, there was a textile mill, and the dyes used to dye fabrics contained chromium, and that's, you know, carcinogenic, I believe. Mm-hmm. So
you don't you don't want that flooding into your basement.
Yeah, you don't want that rushing down down the river and to places where maybe people probably don't use that area too much for recreation now, but. You know, you don't want it getting to the places where people do. So,
yeah. So that's certainly a big deal getting done. The work is starting, fairly soon on that from what I understand, right?
Yeah. They had been talking as soon as the ground thaws. I was there when they did their, pre-bid meeting in must've been November. So they have the low bid. The state's working on awarding it, and then as soon as they're able to mobilize equipment and, you know, be safe about it with not worrying about winter and everything, they'll be doing that. So,
and how long will that project go?
I think the estimated duration is like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
I think it was three construction cycles, but I think a lot of it depends on how much they can, you know, really work. Like if they have a long construction season this year, maybe it's two. But if you get snow in mid-October and you start shutting down or slowing, then that obviously changes the equation.
So. Yeah, just hope for good weather when we get these projects, and they get done a lot faster that way. But, you know, not much in control there. Tyler Shedd, the city engineer for the city of Pittsfield, is here with me on Morning Drive this morning talking about lots of city projects. We're going to take that top of the hour break that we do right now and come back and talk about more projects. Certainly the BMC North Street roundabout that's anyone who's driven through that knows exactly what's going on there, and talk about the West Street area. A lot of interest with that, and some safe streets for all, maybe some speed humps when we get back. So this is 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio, also 88.1 Lee, and we will be right back after this. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from Precision Brows, specializing in creating flawless microblading that enhances beauty and saves time every day. Find them online at myprecisionpmu.com or call 413-553-1059.
WTBR-FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'd be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
Thinking about starting a successful business or expanding an existing one? We've helped over 1,500 businesswomen and men do just that. We're the Massachusetts Small Business Development Center Network, located in Pittsfield, and we cover all of Berkshire County. Contact us at 499-0933 or visit us on the web at msbdc.org/Berkshire. Best of all, our services are free and confidential.
WTBR 89.7 FM.
Support for Mundo Latino comes from Community Health Programs. Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And UCP of Western Mass. Turn passion into purpose when you apply at UCP of Western Mass, now offering full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. It's more than just a job, it's our identity. Apply today at ucpwma.org/jobs.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM. Sean Sayre here with you this morning on Thursday, January 30th. And yes, almost all the way through January, believe it or not. That's a quick month. Usually it's a long month. It feels like it went quicker this time. Anyway, we have Tyler Shedd here with us. He is the city engineer for the city of Pittsfield, talking about all the various road, bridge, dam projects that are going on in the city right now. It seems like we have a lot of them, but that's good. Things are getting done. And we'll be right back after taking care of the weather here first and find out what's in store for us over the next day or so from the National Weather Service. Here we go. Berkshire
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Winter weather advisory in effect from 4 a.m. to 1 p.m. EST Friday. Today, sunny, colder with highs in the lower 20s. West wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 4 below. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Cold with lows around 16. Temperature rising into the upper 20s after midnight. Southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
And I was hearing that we're headed for a kind of a wintry mix tomorrow of some kind. Rain, snow, we're in that line. You know, further north is going to get all of the snow and further south going to get all of the rain. So it depends on where that line moves. I was looking at some of the maps yesterday. And of course, who knows until it actually happens, right?
Yeah, I feel like Pittsfield sits between sort of two key data points, you know, with Albany and Springfield. And for Christmas this year, I asked for a weather station for my backyard, and it's supposed to predict the next 24 hours. And once the ground thaws and I can get it out there, I'll see how accurate that is.
But. Well, you know, and people pick which one they think is more accurate. Generally, I think Albany gets it right for us more than Springfield does. I don't know why, but I think I'm more likely to listen to the Albany meteorologist to know what's actually going to hit us. But again, sometimes you just don't know. They don't know. You know, they know kind of what's going to happen, but it all depends on what the temperature is, where that line runs through. Yeah, some days you just know you're going to get snow, but other days you just don't know exactly what's going to happen. So, you know, look out your window.
Exactly.
Tyler Shedd is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, and we're talking about various projects here in the city. And let's move on to the big North Street project. Anyone who's driven from, let's say, First Street up toward past BMC knows that that is a huge project in progress right now. The whole sort of landscape of that interchange and that whole area is going to be very, very different from what we remember, and hopefully improved, right?
Yeah, there'll be a circle there instead of the odd arrangement. Mm. There's sort of a gore there where the two streets met originally. Yeah. And
that was an odd one, right? Because you had basically a one road that's going to take you back to First Street and the Tyler Street interchange, and you had that other sort of almost felt like an off-ramp that went past BMC that took you back to North Street. And then you had, I forget what the avenue is, it's coming right down, right in front of BMC that would normally make an interchange with the BMC entrance, but it was always kind of sketchy about how, you know, where's the traffic going to come from? If I move into this intersection, is someone going to fly right in and hit me?
Yeah, Stoddard Ave across, yeah. So hopefully that all gets cleaned up. That's one of those, the state, city paid for the design and really drove the design, and now the state is paying for the sort of construction of it, and they're managing that. We met with them sort of a close of season type meeting, and also to do some additional coordination with Berkshire Medical Center and the MAC building that they're doing a lot of additions to. And in that meeting, I remember them saying that they're a few weeks ahead of schedule, but they don't, you know, they weren't anticipating that to remain the case. Yeah. They'd been working quite a bit later into the season than they thought they could to get some sidewalk down. But yeah, slightly ahead of schedule there. I think it's still two more construction seasons before they're 100% done and buttoned up.
Wow. So that's a very long-term one.
Yeah.
But people have seen some of the changes already, and obviously there are some impacts to those neighborhoods as well. I was driving past there the other day realizing that, you know, if I was one of those houses where, you know, the road has sort of diverged heading north now to sort of over to the left, and you've got this area here where, like, okay, if I'm getting out my driveway, how am I going anywhere from there? That must be really difficult.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, with the circle, it slows the cars down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and I know that, like, this was one of those projects that, you know, talking with people at the hospital, they said goes back to, like, the 70s of mm-hmm. them trying to fix or do something to fix that this location. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and that's a critical location for emergency services, too, right?
I mean,
you have to have good traffic flow to make sure that you can efficiently get people in and out of a major hospital. I mean, and that's the major hospital for this entire area.
Yeah. And they don't want, you know, an intersection that's a high crash intersection located at their front step.
Yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, the ambulance doesn't have so far to go, but they don't want it to be the ambulance mm-hmm. getting caught up in the backup or in the accident itself. So
what are some of the other things that got wrapped up in that project? Did city utilities involve there, water, signalization, all that other stuff?
So I don't think anything. I think sewer and drain got moved mm-hmm. a little bit. I think the water's largely remaining in place. The state asked if, the state said if we were interested in replacing that water main, that we have to do it before construction, and basically looked at it and said, we don't, you know, it's not a problem area right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it would feel bad to jump it over other areas where we know there's routine breaks or, mm-hmm. you know, things like that nature.
Yep. But eventually the traffic will at least flow through there a little more efficiently. I think that's one thing about roundabouts that people are, you know, they have opinions about whether they think roundabouts are great or not. I happen to like them myself. And I know that the Tyler Street one, for example, where that was always one of those where, is it my turn to go? Can I go? What's going on over here? Do I have to look, you know, 180 degrees behind my shoulder to see if someone's coming down the street? At least now when you get there, you know, you really only have to look one way and the traffic is always moving. Something's always going. You're not sitting there for minutes on end waiting for your chance to jump in. And I think is that kind of what's going to change with this North Street one as well?
Yeah, it'll be the same. The one on North Street's a little bit bigger. I think it's pretty close in size to the one in Great Barrington.
Mm.
I think this one might be an 80-foot circle, and the mm-hmm. one in Great Barrington might be 85.
Okay.
But in terms of the feel of it, it should be similar to that. And I think, you know, when they the first time you build something new, people like holler and complain because it's different, but I really think people are more adaptable than they give themselves credit. And you know, it was new and it was a change, and I think a lot of people who drive through it now, even if they don't like it, they navigate it a lot better than they did when it was first built. And
how does it affect things like snowplow work and things like that?
Oh, those the guys plowing the snow, you know, DPW builds it, and they're also the guys who have to clear the snow. And I don't think it's their favorite area to plow. I think they got to go slow, mm-hmm. and it can't. I think the one on Tyler Street, the big plow trucks with the wings, mm-hmm. I think they have a really hard time with it. So I think they do it with a smaller
mm-hmm.
piece of equipment, like a one ton pickup. So bigger than what most people drive, but not as big as a dump truck.
Okay. Still doable though.
Yeah, still doable. Yeah. And you know, if we did get like a huge snowstorm or something, then you know the wing truck would go and do it. And it's one of those things where it's tight, it's a change, but you know, they figured it out after a couple of snowstorms, and now they have their operating procedure down, and they know what to do. So
so then let's move on to the East Street area.
Yep.
If we will. So the strip between Elm Street, 4th Street area, and all the way up toward the Merrill Road interchange. So I know a lot of people have talked about the condition of that road. It's not in great shape, obviously, but that's because it's part of a larger project that is being designed and going to change that whole area. So give us an idea of what that's going to look like.
Yeah, so sort of what the roads, obviously another thing too, like the people probably know, that road feels very wide.
Yeah.
I would guess, you know, GE days, there's probably two lanes of traffic that was really needed or planning for it.
Mm-hmm. Especially at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, especially during, you know, shift change, right?
Yeah.
And so what they're going to change sort of how that space is driven. And they're not going to, like, the curb line is going to stay for largely the same, you know, talking foot 6 inches away from the center line at most in places. And they're going to add in a shared left turn lane down the middle of it. So when you're trying to, you know, I think especially once you get closer to like the Lyman Street area where there's sort of a couple of automotive businesses, repair shops, things like that, you know, cars will get out of the way and cars sort of sit at the center line with a left blinker on and people go around them. But now there'll be a dedicated space for that. There'll be drive lane in each direction and then buffered bike lanes in each direction.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of east of Silver Lake by the Berkshire Innovation Center and Woodlawn going towards Tyler Street in the circle there, there'll be a, the bike lane will be separated and there'll be a pull off for the bus.
And so it'll be easier to get in and out of, let's say, Woodlawn Avenue from there, too, because that's another one, right, where that shared center lane will probably make a big difference there.
Yeah, and that intersection will be getting changed because those turns are sharp. Those are some sharp turns. I think they're making those bigger radii so that you don't feel like you got to go 5 miles an hour or less around it before without hitting the curb. And also to accommodate, you know, bus routes and things like that, larger trucks maybe going up to Woodlawn Ave.
So here's a good question for you, though. Will that stretch of pavement that's in really poor shape right now, will that survive another sort of driving season before, you know, that construction will start on E Street, or will that have to get addressed first?
So we met with so Maximilian is going to be the contractor doing the work, local firm. They're on E Street themselves, so not a huge surprise. They met with us to see if we could work with them on the schedule and starting a bit earlier. And so we said, yes, Berkshire Gas, you know, as soon as they're comfortable and ready, come, you know, early to middle March, like they can start digging. Like we issue a roadwork moratorium. And we said, especially if you're going to be working on a sidewalk area, you know, we don't have to worry about a late snowstorm with steel plates on the road. Absolutely go for it. And part of that was driven because they said that the current estimated construction duration is 4 years.
Wow. So that's another long-term project once it starts.
Once it starts. Mm-hmm. So that'll be, you know, 2029 by the time they're done.
Wow.
And, you know, Ricardo and I weren't expecting that to be the duration. So we asked them if we can do some heavy patching, you know, overlay, run really thin, like a quarter inch, half inch. Overlay down the drive lanes just so that it's, you know,
tolerable.
Yeah. So that it's because it's not just from the city standpoint, you know, obviously it's rough, it's bumpy, you know, people don't like driving on it and there's complaints. I mean, putting that aside, you know, the plows that go down it, you know, when it's bumpy and rough like that, like that's wear and tear on the plows for winter maintenance.
I would imagine.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's,
must tear it right up, actually. Right?
Yeah, we're not entirely, you know, altruistic, trying to get people smoother rides.
Well, it all has to work.
Yeah, it all has to work. And, you know, definitely Maximilian doesn't want to start taking over all the claims for you know, damaged rims or pop tires or whatever. So,
So that's a project that's starting this year, starting potentially, if everything goes right, sometime in early spring.
Yeah, March time, you'll probably see J.S. Ray, who works for Berkshire Gas, picking up likely down by Lyman Street, where they've already done some major gas line work and continuing, you know, east from there. And then, you know, the utility, overhead utilities, those poles getting set and the wires being moved. And the going back to, a little bit to the PEX Road Bridge, you know, the state, you know, when you can plan things out like that, all that utility work happens first, and you know it's in their minds the big construction start day is well after that work starts. So
Well, and so let's jump for a moment. That's great news that things will get started there on E Street. I'm sure a lot of people will be happy to hear that. We'll jump over to the other side of the city, the West Street area, and there's a couple of things happening there. One of which is the West Street to West Street interchange, I guess you would call it, right? The one that just after the railroad bridge past the big Y and the Salvation Army, right there at the T. That is a project that has been talked about for a long time. The last thing I heard was that that was going to go to design and that there was going to be a traffic signalization going to be installed there at some point. What's the status of that project?
So I would have a better timeline, but I've missed the last two meetings. So we were supposed to have one this week, but with Ricardo sick, it got bumped to next week. So I don't have a reliable update. And I also was out for December on paternity leave.
Congratulations, and, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. So I believe we're still planning to go out to bid this year. I think the 100% construction is those design plans are basically, you know, within a few weeks of being completed. And then we'll go out to bid. And I think the hope is that, you know, it'll be a late spring, early summer start to some of the work there.
Okay.
The plan is definitely, like, the plan is 100%, you know, signalizing that intersection of sort of West, New West, Francis Ave, it used to be before the...
or College Way, Government Drive. I don't know which one is which, but they're both there.
Yeah, one's coming, one's going. And, so that should begin this year. Not knowing who the contractor will be, can't say exactly what we'll see done this year, but it's probably a 2-year job, I'd guess, you know.
And it seemed like the priority on that project was really pedestrian safety. There was a couple of incidents there where people were hit, and it's a very serious area. And, of course, major thoroughfare for the city, lots of cars, right, lots of travel through there.
Yep. Yeah, and we're trying to, you know, and I think sometimes, too, like people who are predominantly drivers feel like a lot of money gets spent on cyclists and pedestrians. But, you know, those people you're going to use the road. They're going to use the road. And even if it's only a fraction of the number of people, it's good that they have a place that's reliable for drivers. You know, it makes it safer for a driver to know and be able to anticipate where things are coming at you from.
Oh, yeah. The drivers want something predictable. You know, they don't want a surprise.
Yeah, it's like when
they want to know exactly where things are and what to watch out for as you're going through.
Yeah, you drive in a new location and, you know, the next time you're traveling to Disney or somewhere and you're following the GPS, like you can feel it yourself where, you know, you're a little unsure. It's like, is it this turn? Is it in the next one? And you drive much slower and the locals are, you know, zipping around you.
Sure. Yeah, it's all very familiar.
Yeah.
So that's got to tie in also to something that we just read in the Berkshire Eagle this past weekend about maybe reimagining part of that West Street, West End infrastructure that was put in during urban renewal. And that's a much larger conversation. I'm sure we could have a whole show about that. You know, how will this project with West Street sort of tie in with potential future plans to maybe bring some of those roads down or to reintegrate neighborhoods and areas of the city to make it a bit more walkable?
Yeah, I think I guess to start, that's really in pursuing that grant was really, you know, Ricardo kind of taking the charge and convincing, you know, Mayor Marchetti that this is a good investment. And it's not, and I guess to that point, it's not probably something that's, you know, going to be implemented maybe even in the next 10 years.
Yeah,
right?
This is being imagined right now.
Yeah,
right?
It's being imagined, and to have something on paper and a firm plan in place that people largely agree on is then a valuable tool to then go and pursue other funding. Like, we could go back to the Reconnecting Communities grant, and there's no cap on the construction cost for that grant. I mean, it's a 20% match from the city, so practically that's the cap.
Whatever we put in.
Yeah.
20% us, 80% what, federal or state or both?
80% federal.
Federal.
With the grants that exist now that were part of the bipartisan infrastructure bill.
And I guess that's the big question, too. A big question mark in the sky, which is any of these things that we thought we might have secured, how secure are they? Can we rely on them to maybe continue to be there to do this kind of work, you know, the federal grant side?
Yeah, and I would say it's probably, if it follows the same timeline as the other federal grant we got last year, it'll be about 8 to 12 months for us to get just a contract agreement in place. And then, you know, we get a contract in place with our contractor. And we've had that. I had a, you know, high level discussion with the city accountant, and was just sort of like, you know, the discussion about what happens if we don't get reimbursed, because it's an 80-20 match, but the city's got to front that 80% and get reimbursed monthly or quarterly or however often we submit for it. But if we, you know, are a negative and we don't get reimbursed for that money, then it comes out of the free cash formula. And that obviously has other implications, because free cash is free cash. It can be used to, you know, this last cycle kept the tax burden a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, $7.5 million free cash for road work. I guess it was ARPA money for water meter grants, but those are the kind of things where you could put free cash towards in DPW. So
having that be a negative drain would stink
for a year for sure.
And I would think also have a chilling effect on future projects, right? If you knew that there was going to be a problem or a potential problem getting paid back for some of that stuff because the grants dried up or you were promised them and that they didn't happen. The cities and towns would then start saying, well, we're just not going to do it because we can't guarantee that we get paid back. That would be a major problem.
Yeah. The cities definitely don't want to get stuck holding the bag, in that way.
Yeah.
And so we've talked about being, you know, cautious about how quickly, you know, we really spend through that money.
Right. But so the overall goal of something like that, if it does get reimagined, what are some of the possibilities? What could change? What could be made better about that area?
I think the biggest change that people would notice is that it's really like the keystone of the project is underground, is burying the rail line that's right there.
Oh, okay.
Depot Street, as people might imagine, was once a rail depot.
Yeah.
And that's partly why it's down so low, and sort of we would cover up the rail and then build streets at a closer to North Street level that then connect over into like Francis Ave or College Way and sort of create more east-west connections to downtown and West Side neighborhood and kind of grow the downtown that way.
So it's kind of a Berkshire's version of the Big Dig.
Yeah, I was
not
thinking,
quite, but I think of what happened in Boston, for example, and how that sort of raised highway all got sunk. And of course, that's a much bigger project than anything we're talking about here. But just the fact that it changed it completely and made that a green space, it's a completely different area.
Yeah, and another location, and this is a project that my first year or two out of school that I worked on a little bit, is the Middlebury Rail. I don't know exactly if that was exactly what the V-Trans called it, but in Middlebury, Vermont, they lowered the elevation of a rail and covered it with, you know, precast concrete sections, and they sort of created this new downtown center square space, or sort of reimagined it. That project is probably a smaller scale than what we're talking about here, but it's that same kind of vision of, you know, there's something, you know, going through the heart of downtown, and we'd like to use that space better.
Right.
And it's largely possible in our case because that land is, you know, owned mostly by the city.
Mm-hmm.
Ricardo has a mock-up that he's done on with like PDF tools that sort of show like you can build a new city grid and like 80% of it is already owned and controlled by the city. So I think in that way it also would kind of be another, like hopefully the old GE lots are developed or being developed by then. And then,
right.
You know, PETA has another thing to step into to build up.
Yeah. Tyler Shedd, my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, the city engineer for the city of Pittsfield. If you're listening, we only got a couple minutes left, and I know we're going to talk about Safe Streets for All grant and speed humps.
Yep.
So they're kind of tied together in some ways. Just tell us a little bit about the speed humps right now on Holmes Road and also on Partridge Road, Oak Hill.
Yeah, so on Partridge Road, Oak Hill, we did those with the, you know, sort of road work and repaving, and I know the people who live there, we repaved it. And then it was almost a full construction season before we got the speed humps in. And, you know, part of speed humps is that, it's a delicate balance and it's not exactly hard engineering. They, you know, the guidance is like 2 to 4 inches.
Of height
on the humps,
okay.
Spread across, you know, 12 feet
and
try to make it sort of this parabolic curve. And that was one of the first ones we built. That I know we've had other ones around, but I think they were all a little bit smaller. And it was the first one my time as city engineer. So I think we said 3 inches high, and the contractor cut out a form and dragged the asphalt and rolled it to 3 inches high. And I think, you know, it feels like a lot. I know if you live there and walk on the street, it's probably great. But if you cut through from Lanesboro, you hate it. And I know because you've probably left me a voicemail.
So the reaction has been mixed, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that what you'd say?
Yeah. I would expect that to be the trend where, you know, people who live there love it because cars slow down. People who hate it don't.
Yep.
And then Holmes Road, we had a larger design in mind that added sidewalks and things, and there was a big negative pushback from the neighborhood to add the sidewalks and to do more of that. So we went ahead with just that one crossing because it's a school kid age used crossing to get to Egremont.
And Tyler, we're going to have to bring you back and talk more about that. I know that has a lot of interest for people, but we're out of time.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate it. Filling in for Ricardo. Very, very great to talk to you. We'll have you back.
Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow on Morning Drive. Take care. Just